We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Are you guys tired of these bonus pods yet? We're on the last one as this amazing tournament builds toward a climax, and I am joined by an old friend of mine, former roommate of mine, actually, but more importantly, he is an award-winning chess journalist for chess.com. He's also the face of chesskid.com. Before that, he was quite an accomplished chess trainer. He's covered a lot of candidates. I've been watching his interviews throughout this one, and excited to welcome back to the pod FM/Fun Master, Mike Klein. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Benny the Bank. I'm happy to be the maraschino cherry to your candidates' coverage.
Thank you. And one other thing for listeners, just to add a little more perspective than I have last night. So I am interviewing Erwin Lemieux when this is over, but that interview is on the 24th. So we'll be a little late with the retrospective. I'll probably get it out on the 25th or 26th, but we're all going to need to process whatever madness unfolds here in the next 72 hours, right, Mike?
Yeah. We could go to the bonus day. We could have some chess on Monday. Tie breaks are a very real possibility. So this is one time where extra work I will not complain about if it ends up going that way.
It's good because, you know, sometimes sports journalists get like old and jaded. They start writing their recaps of the sports in like the fourth quarter. And the last thing they want is drama because then they have to do more work. So I'm glad, Mike, that you're willing to put in the extra hours.
Thanks. Yeah, I like to keep it live, unlike that famous Michael Phelps race down in Sydney where the reporter didn't know that he was going to win by 0.001 and fouled his story early. But Dan Le Batard references aside, we'll get going with the candidates.
Okay, let's do it. So, Mike, how many candidates have you attended in person? Can you even count at this point?
Actually, a common misconception, this is only my second, although I've done all the world championship matches. So that is because in a bygone era, me and Peter Doggers were the news team of chess.com, and he covered more of the European events. So didn't even go to Berlin, didn't go to any of those. Just Madrid and this one, interestingly enough. But I've been to every world championship since 2014.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that tricked me. I just assumed you'd been to them all. Well, how does this one compare to Madrid?
The weather's terrible, but the race for first place is much, much more exciting. On a personal level, I'm doing a bunch of post-game interviews, whereas in Madrid, I was a little bit more behind the scenes. I was doing a Chess Kid auxiliary event, And actually, one of my main things I did in Madrid was basically like a gopher. When a player finished the game, I would communicate whether or not we wanted that player on the live broadcast. Because remember, chess.com had built a studio there with a couch and everything. And I would either cajole a player, please, can you come sit on our couch? Or we don't need you today type thing. But here I have a little bit more of an active role. But really, it's all about the fact that there's four players very much in contention for first place with two rounds to go, which is much more exciting than just watching one player run away with things like in 2022.
Yeah, well, I want to dig a little more behind the scenes. So obviously they do the post-game pressers with FIDE. I assume that something like that is written into the contract. Are you able to divulge with like your chess.com interviews? Are you relying purely on goodwill for getting people to talk with you?
Yeah, a lot of it is based on like how you've treated the players in the past, right? They need to trust you as a person. But I will say this is, I believe, public information. Their contract states they have to give 30 minutes to the media each round. And if Anna Bratostova, who's the FIDE press officer, does a public press conference, that counts against the 30 minutes, but it never lasts 30 minutes. So I can say full credit to the players. We've been here 12 rounds and only twice has a player said no to my request to be interviewed. Once was Faruja, although he said yes every other time. And in the media world, you tend not to push it too much when you need a player for 14 rounds. You know, you let them go if there's something happening in the world. And despite all of the Faruja controversy, it had nothing to do with that. It was actually a little bit earlier in the tournament. And then two rounds ago, Napomniachtchi played the latest game. And actually, it's kind of funny. He had a public press conference and Bratostova asked the crowd, does anybody have any questions? And before we could even answer, Napomniachtchi leaned to the microphone and said no. So we let him go that day as well. Now, a little behind the scenes, I don't think the world knows this. He was the first player to finish in round 12, but there was doping control. He did not get out of there until 90 minutes or so after. He was actually the last player to leave the venue yesterday, even though he was the first game to finish in the candidates because of doping control. And he didn't come to the media that day because, you know, IWADA, or actually it's some kind of Canadian agency, needed him. But I got to say, all the players have done their job, and some a little bit begrudgingly, but it's made it a lot more interesting to get access.
Yeah, glad to hear that. And that's crazy. What are they doing? Like, how long does it take to have someone pee in a cup?
Well, I've heard that you can get shy on demand. I don't want to get too graphic, but, you know, sometimes, like, you don't know until after the game that you're going to get doping control. So imagine that you did your business right before the game ended. You know, winning on demand is one thing, but peeing on demand is quite another 2800 skill.
We really should get back to chess on that note. So there's been a lot of talk. Like last night I chatted with FM Dalton Perrine, who was there as a fan, and I referenced an interview I watched of Peter Svidler. I keep forgetting Charlize's last name. Is it Van Til?
So I've got the inside scoop on how you say this in Afrikaans. And by the way, it's Afrikaans. It's Fun Sail.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right. I feel less bad about. Okay. So anyway, very insightful interview from Charlize, as she's done with several of the guests. And Peter was just talking about how tense the atmosphere was. Can you sense that as a reporter, Mike?
Unfortunately, I have very limited access to the playing hall. So in that sense, I'm not in there during a lot of those critical moments. I will say, though, there's about 50 some odd cameras set up. So the players' reactions when they're losing or when they're winning are being captured. And luckily, chess.com has access to all those videos. So we are looping them together afterward and creating these really dramatic elements post, post round. But during the round, I don't get this huge sense of that, what it feels like in the playing hall. You are kind of allowed in during these certain windows, but then if you leave, you can't get back in. It's a really complicated thing based on fair play. When they get to the media room, though, I think a lot of that energy kind of dissipates. You know, the game is over, the tension is broken. So unfortunately, because that 15 minutes and the restrictions in the playing hall, I don't get a lot of that feel as a reporter. However, in the playing hall, no cell phones, no cameras, anything. It's like the old days. You have to really be in tune with the moment. So I imagine the spectators are getting a little bit more of a tense feel than I am.
Okay, that makes sense. And of course, there's been a lot of discussion. I mean, as I was telling you before we started recording, I feel almost, even though I'm, sitting here in my basement in New Jersey, I feel almost too close to it in terms of like my ability to gauge whether this tournament is, grabbing people more than a typical candidate. But that is my overall sense, and it's not hard to tell why. We've had more decisive results and fresher openings in my mind. Douglas Griffin, great chess blogger of Soviet chess history, just tweeted this morning, quote, did have the feeling that there have been a lot of decisive games at this candidate, and it seems to be true. And then, so he said, through 12 rounds, 45.8% decisive games in Toronto. Madrid had 41. Yekaterinburg in 2020, 44. Berlin, fittingly, in 2018 had 35. Moscow in 2016 had 28. Khanty-Mansisk in 2014, 39. And London in 2013 had 44. Insert your own London joke there. So do you have any theories, Mike, for why this chess, if it has been more compelling, why?
I just want to throw in one more stat. In round two, I believe, we had four decisive games, and it was only the second time in history that we had a round with four decisive games.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, Nakamura has five consecutive decisive games. I think Vaishali has seven. Don't quote me on that, but it's something like that. So yeah, the statistics abound. I don't know that I can say why exactly. I mean, you've got youth, right, who don't know, maybe to play for a draw after a loss and that whole theory. Maybe they don't subscribe to that idea anymore. Maybe that's just one of those axioms that we say, but it's not really, you know, in practice anymore. So I don't have a great theory. At some point we have to say, is the sample size too small? But I don't know. We're already in round 12. It might be that because no player has gotten a big score, the other players are, you know, feeling like they're a little bit more in it. And, you know, when it comes to Hikaru, who's responsible for a lot of these by himself, you know, we'd have to keep trusting him at his word that he's here for the content. And he's still playing really interesting openings. Now, this is the big question. I actually put this question to Hikaru the other day. I was like, come on, homie. Are you, you know, in the right circumstance, will you shut things down based on a tournament situation? Are you really going to be all about the content until the end? I think, you know, to a man, he would say, yeah, think about it for his situation. If you win the tournament, look how much more content you get.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. No, I think he'll be starting to zero in on that. But yeah, generally the goals of, I mean, he's talked about how he gets more clicks with decisive results. So the goals have been aligned since he's been playing catch up a little bit. Now, of course, he's tied for first, and, you know, rating based models have him as a live favorite. But it's so tight at the top that, like, for example, tomorrow's game with Nepo, I was discussing with Dalton Perrine, like, I don't think they'll go the boring draw route. What do you think, Mike?
Well, Nepomniachtchi, I've been noticing as white in the second half, he has not been going for much. He's almost been like in lead protect mode. However, that has to change, right? If you're Nepomniachtchi, you have one white left, and it's not good enough to cruise in with two draws because somebody could very easily just win a single game, or Fabi could go 2-0. So if you're in a four-way race, I don't think you can shut down your last white, even if it's against Nakamura. So I would be a little bit surprised if he continued that passive strategy as white tomorrow. I didn't look at this, but I guess everybody has one white and one black, right? That would make sense.
Yeah, but the other thing to note is Nepo has black against Fabi in the last round. So right. all the more reason that he can't coast.
Exactly. And by the way, Fabi went from an 8% chance to win to 7.5% after winning his game.
Right. Yeah.
It's really, really wild what's been happening. Fabi, by the way, just to give you a little report on some players, he was so down after his loss a couple of rounds ago. He came to the media room, and there, I want to be sure, because the internet has construed my words, he was not crying. He had water in his eyes.
Okay.
As one does when they do a hot sauce challenge. But it's as sad as I've seen him. I didn't see him that way when he lost the London World Championship.
Wow.
Now, of course, in the London World Championship, he had maybe, you know, a couple minutes to compose himself before he came to the press room. But he's turned things around. He seems much more positive. He understands he's still a big underdog. But he has really showed a rejuvenation the last couple of rounds. That's been good to see. But yeah, I think Nepomniachtchi has to go for something tomorrow.
Yeah. And with Fabi, I mean, obviously he'll be crushingly disappointed, I would think, if he doesn't qualify. But it's got to feel better to at least have played a really good game yesterday and to be in the mix, you know, to we will see what happens from here. One other question I had, Mike, the sort of thing that this is why we have you, because I can ask you this and other people maybe might not have this level of detail. You know, when I was interviewing another fan, Denis Markov, in the early days of the tournament, he mentioned, and actually Dalton alluded to this last night in my interview as well, that when the matches are over, there's a bus outside waiting for the players. And obviously, Toronto is a city, you know, obviously booming metropolis. People could take cabs. People could stay at places within walking distance. But do you have the impression that all the players are staying at some hotel that's far enough that a bus is required?
Yeah, I can tell you very specifically. Is it public information? Yeah, I think it's public information. One hotel is the place that pretty much all the players are staying. It's also where chess.com had the Champions Chess Tour finals the last couple of years. So I'm pretty familiar with the hotel. It's about a 25-minute walk away. So okay. In good weather, a player that wanted to get some exercise could totally walk it. Although I believe players are usually taking the shuttle transportation service. Sometimes they're coming with their significant other or their coach or whatever. There is more than one van. They're kind of on a loop going back and forth. I'm not going to say who, but I believe every single player except for one is staying at that hotel. I think there's one player who is not, and I don't even know where that player is staying. But please don't put me on the record and ask me who, because I'm not sure this player wants to know. It's a little bit of a privacy thing, I think. One hotel might have a connection to the Scheinberg family. I really don't know. There are a couple hotels that are a little bit closer, but they're not quite as expansive. And actually, the closest hotel is called the Drake, and they has nothing to do with the singer, apparently, although they sort of lean into this coincidence and a lot of their printed stuff. Uh-huh. About that. But there's drag queen brunch on Saturdays. They've got DJs playing at night. It is not the appropriate place for a player to play or to player okay. to stay. It's really cool if you want to be in the middle of things, but it's not the best place if you're looking for some kind of quiet. So, but most players are using the transportation service, and the crowds have been so big outside the exit hall that there are security and bodyguards that are forming pathways like the Red Sea to let the player go straight in. But the players actually, when they're at the top of the stairs, I can hear them communicating to security. Like, security asks, hey, do you want to sign autographs or do you want to go straight in? And for example, yesterday, a lot of the players said, I want to go straight in, but they still sign a couple of autographs anyway, because fans are staying outside in the freezing cold. And with the 15-minute delay and everything, fans don't really know when a game is going to end or when a player is going to get done with media and stuff. So some fans are really like braving it in terrible conditions to get autographs.
Wow. It's fascinating. And are you at the hotel where most of the players are staying?
No. I mean, chess.com's doing well. We're not doing that well. It's like $500, $600 a night.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm not going to dox myself and say what hotel I'm staying at.
But, okay.
No, I'm staying pretty close by, but not actually at that hotel.
Okay. And for listeners, the Scheinberg family, of course, is the sponsor, former partner with chess.com, and generously sponsoring this wonderful event.
Actually, Isai got an award at the opening ceremony, and it's one of the first times I've ever seen him speak. He gave a public speech at the opening ceremony, and he grew a mustache, and he's looking like a pretty chill dude. So I know Isai reasonably well, and it was good to see him, like, you know, be recognized publicly. He's a guy, even in Isle of Man, who like literally hides behind curtains to watch the action. So it's good to see him get a little bit more open and public. And by the way, the action is getting so exciting that I think Rex Singfield is coming today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I just got some news for that. I hope Rex doesn't mind me saying that. But he doesn't get on planes anymore. He's done his business travel allotment for a lifetime, but he's getting on a plane to come here. So that is how exciting things are getting. And of course, the big question is, if an American wins, are we going to see a world championship on U.S. soil? I don't know.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I guess we're getting close to where we can actually think about that.
We can, yeah.
That would be amazing. Just a couple more things for you, Mike. Number one, there's been drips and drabs reported about who's seconding who. I assume if someone's there on site, like they assume the jig is up, they're no longer trying to keep it secret. So can you give us a rundown of seconds that you've seen, just in case anyone was missed in the internet discourse?
Yeah, unfortunately, seconds are not making their way to the playing hall that much, because there's a very interesting rule that the players basically agreed on at the technical meeting, that no seconds or even family members are allowed in the playing hall at all, full stop. I actually heard Fabiano Caruana talk about this after the technical meeting. He made the statement, which is true, that all of the female candidates have trainers that are stronger than them. And so there's all kinds of issues with that. In fact, that led to a little bit of the Alireza Faruja dad controversy, which if you want to know more about, we can talk about. But that was the first time at the technical meeting I saw Peter Svidler make a public appearance with Pragnananda. So he wasn't really trying to hide it. We know Gajewski, the longtime trainer of Anand, is working with Gukesh. I saw Rajabov there, and it turned out I thought he was working with Abasov, right, two Azerbaijanis, but he's actually working with Lei Tingji, who he helped at the world at the Women's World Championship match. That's a little bit of a longer partnership. Shakhriyar Mamedyarov is here. He's the one working with Abasov. By the way, Ivan Shaparinov, I've been hanging out at Pub Chess with a lot. Really fun guy. I've been having a great time playing variants with him, and just he's been enjoying him time. But he's here helping Nirgul Salamova, Bulgarian connection there. So on the candidate side, let's make sure we get that right. Who else am I missing? Name a player, and I'll tell you who I know.
Well, Jan Gustafsson is allegedly there.
We have double Jan. That's true. And the only time I saw Gusti was after the technical meeting. So it was actually really important for me to be in that hallway outside the technical meeting. Fabiano is here with Gregory Oparin and Christian Carrilla. I forget if we have Nicholas Hushenbeth. I have not seen here. I wasn't sure if he was working with Nakamura. I saw Chris Littlejohn, you know.
Okay.
By the way, Chris's full-time job is being Nakamura's second. I don't know if...
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool. And then
Hikaru's stepdad, Sunil?
Sunil has not been here the whole time, but I've seen him the last couple of rounds.
Okay. Yeah.
So he's here. And Hikaru's wife is here, Atusa, and her sister. A lot of them came on the Eclipse boat a couple of weeks ago. We went out on Lake Ontario to catch the Eclipse. So Atusa and her family were there. So... yeah, that's a pretty big chunk. I'm not sure who I'm missing, though. Oh, Vidid is here with Ganguly and also with Vakatoro.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we come back, we will hear FM Mike Klein's perspective on the Alireza Faruja loud shoe controversy. We'll be right back. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the rundown. I think I'd heard everyone, but I'd already forgotten a few. And I think the last major story, as you alluded to, you kind of ended up kind of in the middle of the Shoegate 2, the sequel. You know, the sequel is always not as good as the original. But for listeners who are not caught up, basically, there was a controversy where Faruja was told to walk more quietly during the games because there had been a complaint by Abasov during the game. And first, you interviewed the chief arbiter, who gave a very reasonable explanation, Aris Margetis. And then on the subsequent day, Hamid Faruja, Ali Reza's dad, was there and ended up actually being kicked out of the venue because... he was advocating for his son's rights and also expressing some concerns about anti-cheating. So, Mike, I don't know where you want to take this whole story. I mean, I guess maybe you could start with what your perspective was when the news started to break.
Yeah, I didn't know about any of this until Alireza Faruja tweeted that this moment had happened. Otherwise, it wasn't a news story. Nobody would have known about it. Again, right. one of the hazards of not being in the playing hall, never saw it happen. But it breaks down like this. In the playing hall, they have a makeshift stage that's probably 1 foot off the ground. It has some small carpeting on it, and the players all play on there. However, the refreshments area, which is very close to the stage, we're in a 125-year-old building, is on regular hardwood floor. And Abasov was the one closest to that refreshments area, and he made a complaint to Aris Margetis. And Aris decided that, first of all players' needs are equal. Didn't matter that Abasov, you know, of course, was not doing as well in the tournament as Faruja. But he made the claim or the judgment that the bothering of Faruja was not as severe or not as, harmful to the tournament as allowing a player to be bothered when other players might be bothered as well. Like, he had to make kind of a judgment call. And so kudos to FIDE for actually allowing me to interview Aris Margetis. Not every arbiter would do it. So when the games were all over, I asked Aris if I could talk to him. And he said, I've got to consult first with the FIDE technical delegate, which is Pavel Tregubov. And so they consulted and they decided what they were able to say. And Aris came down and I didn't really say much. I just kind of asked him to elaborate on exactly what happened. And he tried to be as, you know, show as much emotional intelligence as possible and, you know, wait for the right moment until... Faruja, hey, maybe, you know, could you walk a little more softly? Could maybe wear different shoes? And that's what set everything off. You know, Aris was put in a very imperfect situation. He was in a really old building and, you know, he's not in charge of the carpeting or the creaking or any of that stuff. So that's what set it off. And he, you know, I think he gave a pretty reasonable explanation about what happened and people can decide whether or not he should have done it or should not have. But so then the next day, I was told, I was not there in the hallway, but I was told that Alireza Firouzja's dad was escorted out. I have multiple people that have told me security had their hands on him. Like it was a physical escorting out. And so I went down to the sidewalk to see what happened. And this is where the story gets kind of funny. I think your listeners might really enjoy hearing this. I wanted to observe Alireza Firouzja's dad talking with Pavel Tregubov on the sidewalk. I'm trying to gather information, see what's going on. But I don't want to just be a voyeur or lurk. So I went in the fan zone and I decided I wanted someone to talk to on the street to make it look like I was just talking. And this ended up being unbelievable luck, if you want to call it that. The first person I made eye contact with was Ari Antari. So I motioned for Arian to come outside. He comes outside. I was like, hey, Arian, can you just chat with me a little bit here? There's a little bit of a developing situation. We're just going to kind of look to our left and observe. And a few minutes later, Alireza Firouzja's dad, Hamid Reza, comes over. And I had totally forgotten that Arian spoke Farsi. So Hamid Reza starts talking with Arian in Farsi. And, you know, it's a bunch of Farsi words. And then he says chess.com. And a bunch of Farsi words and chess.com. And I think he's really mad at me for interviewing Aris or something. So I'm a little bit afraid that I'm going to be. But it turns out he was basically asking Arian something like, hey, would chess.com interview me?
Oh, perfect.
He was very deferential to me. So on the sidewalk, he came up to me and he said, hey, will you interview me? He really wanted the interview to be live, and we did our best to make it live, although our technical capabilities are not as great on the sidewalk as in our studio. But anyway, so what ended up happening was he explained why he was removed. Now, Pavel Tregubov, I interviewed him later, and he said, although they developed this rule that no players or families or players, families or seconds are allowed in the playing hall, they recognized that a player's family member might want to see their player once in the tournament. So they decided in rounds 8, 9, and 10, they would allow players' families in for 15 minutes. They basically relaxed the rule. And Pavel largely relaxed the rule due to Hamid Reza's complaints, if you want to call it that. Hamid Reza did not go into the playing hall in rounds 8 and 9. He didn't take advantage of the 15 minutes. But in round 10, according to Pavel, not only did he go in the playing hall, he insisted on being able to be there the entire round, which, of course, was not the agreement, was not the concession that FIDE had made. And according to Pavel, Hamid Reza was even threatening to call the police if he was not allowed in. So that's kind of the story and how it unfolded. It was just kind of random that I was in the right place at the right time with Ari Antari, the Farsi speaker. I don't know if it came across as great TV. I didn't know what Hamid Reza was going to say. I tried to control the interview a little bit, which was not always so easy. But then things calmed down greatly. And Alireza Firouzja gave a great interview to me a day or two later where he said, like, I understand. I do walk loudly. Like, that is a problem I have. I don't blame Abbasov at all. I do wish FIDE had done their job and picked a better location or done better with the flooring. But he didn't blame the arbiter. He didn't blame Abbasov. He understood that it's the way he walks. So kudos to him. He shut down the controversy. He also said, you know, I'm a little bit, he didn't use the word emotional, but he gets a little bit, you know, yeah. I get a little bit hot under the collar, and he did too. So that was great to see. I thought it was a lot of maturity from a young man.
Good for him. Yeah, I hadn't caught that. And I did feel like, you know, as I mentioned in a previous pod, like Chess Base India posted the audio of him walking and you could hear it quite loudly. So, and I of course agree with your point that like FIDE could have put like a carpeted area or something like that. You know, I mean, it's hard to foresee, you know, every possible contingency of whatever shoe-based controversy is going to emerge during a chess tournament. So,
right, I'm just going to jump in and say, in 2022, the day before the Madrid tournament started, I saw Alireza Firouzja and his dad in the walkthrough, and they were talking about the flooring situation at the Palacio de Santona in Madrid. So this has become an issue. When FIDE picks one of these historical buildings, you have to understand that the flooring may not be as, you know, auditorially promising as you want it to be. So anyway.
That's funny. And it was also good to hear, of course, in the heat of the moment when you did interview Alireza's dad, he mentioned his son had been upset and mentioned maybe not wanting to play chess. And Alireza subsequently has sort of backtracked on that as well. And of course, we all as chess fans want to see him play.
Right. And as somebody pointed out online, as many people pointed out, we have all said we're never going to play chess again. Everyone. Yeah. Like, it's just that he's a public figure. I actually have come across as being able to relate to Ali Reza a lot better in the last couple of days. So yeah, you know, it's a big tournament. You get emotional. It wasn't going well. And but he's taken the long view.
Okay. Well, glad that that controversy, knock on wood, is done, and that they're playing chess, and we've got some epic stuff coming in the next, as I said, 72 hours. So, Mike, this has been a lot of color, a lot of details that it's tough to get when you're not at the venue. So I really appreciate it. Anything else listeners should know, or final thoughts?
I have to just get back to studying Farsi. I think that's about it. I will report, Ben, based on our mutual history, there are Thai restaurants every block.
Oh, sounds so good.
We welcome you here whenever you want to jump on a plane.
All right. Well, I mean, if we can make it happen in North America for the World Championship, I'm running out of excuses. So eventually I may need to visit one of these venues. But thanks as always, Mike. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ben. It's a fun being on your podcast once a year, as always.
Sports Social Podcast Network.